Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
I am rubbing my rabbit's foot.
Rooster.
I do, Yankee haters.
Pope.
Hold my beer.
Milk.
You looked that guy up like 10 minutes before the show.
And Bison.
It's just pure hate, man. Just pure hate. That's all it is.
SMQBs episode 220. Gentlemen, how you doing tonight?
Doing all right.
Doing good.
How are you doing, Bison? Right.
Good, good, good. All right, Rooster, who are you bringing to the bar this week?
I'm taking Jeff Van Gundy, and I want to know if he's interested in the damn Knicks job. And number two, have they contacted him? Because if they haven't, I'm going to be furious.
Nobody's interested in that job. Ugh. All right, Pope, how about you? Who are you bringing?
We're going to be talking about it for most of the show, but I'm bringing Sam Burns because I feel like he really deserves a shot after what he had to go through on 15 and, you know, basically the back nine. The U.S. Open was within his grasp, and things changed, and he got a really bum ruling on 15 that we'll talk about. So I'm gonna buy old Sam a shot and tell him to keep his head up because he's got a great future.
All right. I'm going to bring a baseball player who I've never cared for. I want to bring Alex Bregman and just sort of sit there and ask him if he's happy with himself now, because he's the one who started all this Rafael Devers drama out there. So I just want to know, Alex, are you happy with yourself? Do you feel good about yourself? And we'll get to that a little bit later. But first, Rooster, talk to us a little bit about your case management software, my case management software, Pope's case management software.
That's right. Friends, if you know, from their tried and true Needles and TrialWorks case management software programs to the new Neos cloud-based system, Assembly software is the best case management out there for litigation law firms and has the best support staff, which will make your staff very happy. Check them out at assembly.com.
All right, Pope, let's get into a little bit of the U.S. Open, a little bit of a wild Sunday. Talk to us.
Yeah, you guys, obviously we were texting during mainly the back nine. What an amazing tournament the U.S. Open was this year. I mean, every year there's great drama. You know, it's just totally different than the Masters and the other majors, because it is carnage on steroids, and it's train wreck TV, and it's just fun for us hackers to watch the pros struggle like we do when they get in trouble.
I hate it.
Well,
you,
okay.
you hate watching them struggle like we do.
If I wanted to see golfers, you know, score 27 over, I'd go play with my friends.
It's a great test, and you know, they hit some amazing shots out of really, really tough lies and tough places. And so, you know, the winner of the U.S. Open is survived 72 holes of just every year. It gets more difficult sometimes depending on the course. And Oakmont's always had a tradition as being one of the tougher courses where you don't expect to see a winner under par. The winner was J.J. Spahn, and everybody's like, well, who the hell is that, right?
Who?
Yeah. Right. I mean, and, you know, so we could talk about the bigger picture of LIV versus the PGA Golf Tour, but because of LIV taking some of the best talent away, you do see guys like J.J. Spahn rise where maybe they wouldn't have had an opportunity otherwise. But believe it or not, guys, I mean, this 34-year-old journeyman, this has been his best year by far. He actually made a playoff against Rory in the Players and lost in the playoff. He drained his ball on 17 like so many others do, but gained a lot of confidence from that. And coming in, he was 15th in the world golf rankings, which again may beg the question of how accurate are those true rankings. But JJ, you know, started the day behind Adam Scott and Sam Burns, and he proceeded to bogey five of the first six holes. And you were like, not ready for prime time. Shot a 40 on the front. Now, he did get extremely unlucky when he had his shot on two hit the flag. Instead of having a chip in, you know, a tap in birdie putt, he had to scramble to make bogey because it went down 50 yards down the fairway. So he had some bad breaks, but Burns and Scott, you know, they didn't exactly run away, which they could have in the beginning when the conditions were much better. And then the rain came, and Burns and Scott were, you know, leading at the time, and Spahn was still plus two, but he took the opportunity to, you know, reset, came out, and he shot a 32 on the back. He had four birdies and one bogey, and those birdies, you know, over 100 feet of putts, including probably the greatest putt in major championship history. So you could argue maybe the greatest putt in golf history, 64-foot putt to win the U.S. Open. Now, all he had to do was two putt to beat Robert McIntyre.
Right. Let's relax on the greatest putt in golfing history. I mean,
He had one to give, but, you know, it was no guaranteed two putt. He did have the fortune of having Victor Hovland put his ball on the approach just like 2 feet outside of JJ. So he got a read, kind of like DeMarco gave a read to Phil at the Masters in 2004. And yes, I mean, it was high drama. Now, there's been some dispute among us about how far by that golf ball would have raced if it hadn't hit the hole. I think it would have been five or six because it goes downhill from the hole. Some people say, no, it was perfect. Maybe it would have been a tap-in otherwise. But either way, the drama was it was waterlogged 18, drained the putt in the rain. It was just one of those cinematic sports moments that you just like, yes, that's why I watch sports. I mean, what'd you guys
think? Didn't he essentially win the tournament, though, by birdieing 17?
Well, he went up by one. Yeah, he was tied with McIntyre on the 17th tee, and he hit that amazing drive. You know, he went right by the hole on 17, which was that shortened par four. No other players were able to get it that close, and he two-putted for a birdie. So he's on the 18th tee box with a one-shot lead, and he hits a drive of his life, just straight down the middle. And then, you know, he kind of pulled his approach, but he still has to get down in two, and that's no easy task, especially if he left himself 4 or 5 feet, you know, with the pressure. And he took all of that out by making the putt.
I mean, again, it was obviously a great tournament, and you know, we'll talk about the weather in a minute here. But I do think it's hyperbole to call it the greatest putt in golf. It's probably a top 10 clutch major putt, that's for sure. But, you know, beyond that, I don't know, Pope.
I mean, you take the circumstances, which are U.S. Open, and the length, which is 64 feet, and, you know, it is a putt to win the tournament. I mean, you know, it says putt to win the U.S. Open, which it was.
Yeah, but the next one would have been a putt to win it, too.
It would have.
Yeah.
Didn't have to worry about it. You don't want to have the stress of a guy like that who'd – what I showed you guys, like – his highest finish in the majors was like 23rd at the Masters a couple years ago. And he missed the cut at the U.S. Open and the Open, hadn't even finished. So this was just out of nowhere kind of, and to have the pressure taken away by making the putt was, I don't know. I mean, it's one of the great putts. Maybe it wasn't the greatest putt, but it's one of the great putts.
Agree with that.
And you know, it was kind of an interesting leaderboard. It was not chock full of major champions. I mean, Scotty and Rahm finished four over, and they were as close as any of the other major champions, and they never really challenged the whole tournament. Hovland is still probably the best player to not win a major. Tyrell Hatton made another great run. Carlos Ortiz came out of nowhere. He's another LIV golf star. So I would say, you know, LIV did okay, except, you know, there were true stars like DeChambeau, DJ, and others. They totally sputtered and missed the cut.
Well, here's the thing. Who are these golfers? I mean, we're looking at the list because, you know, we do this little bet amongst ourselves where we look at on Sunday morning and we try and pick who's going to go low that day. And you're looking through the leaders and the guys who are up there. I don't know. I mean, Is this good? Is it bad? I don't know. What do you guys, how do you feel about this? Because I looked at that leaderboard and, you know, I follow golf a little bit and I didn't recognize hardly any of the names.
Well, I mean, you had Adam Scott, you know, who was trying to be the oldest, well, the biggest span between winning majors would have been 13 years since his win at the Masters in 12. So, look, Sam Burns has been a name for a while. He's got 5 tournament wins. And he's got some big tournament wins, and he was in a playoff last week at the Canadian, so he'd been playing well. And he's been a Ryder Cup team, so, I mean, he's not a complete unknown.
Adam Scott was never really that popular, and even, and the last time he was slightly popular, people were still playing with Adam's tight lie clubs.
You
remember he was the spokesperson for them? I mean, come on. It's been a while. Yeah, I'm with Bison. I just thought this was – not as entertaining. I'll bet the viewership was down until Sunday. The ratings were probably down. There's no exciting stars to root for these days.
Yeah, I mean the only reason to log in and watch is to see if Scheffler's going to win, right? And maybe if you see like Bryson up there. But I don't know.
Bryson couldn't keep the ball in the fairway.
Yeah, I just don't. Golf is not in a good spot right now.
Yeah, I agree.
And just proves, you know, greed destroys everything. It's not in a good spot. These guys who left and took the money for Liv, they're not feeling good about where they are. They're not winning majors. They got a lot of money, but I don't think that they're probably. You know, maybe they're happy because they were just in it for the money anyway, so maybe they are okay with everything, but it's not like they're coming out and being competitive, really. I mean, sure, you had some guys in the leaderboard.
DJ is an embarrassment.
Yeah.
I mean, he admitted he took the money. Yeah. That's the only reason he went over.
Yeah, but he doesn't even come close to making the cut anymore. He's terrible.
And is the LIV Tour making money? Do they even care? I mean, who did this help? Nobody. I don't see that it was good for anybody.
No, I would completely agree with that. But I mean, I guess somebody who enjoys watching golf, period, and I'm more of that than you guys are, can still get interested in the chase for a major championship and watching the pressure get to these guys, even if they're not well-known names. You know, remember, Scottie Scheffler started at some point. I mean, he was just a good golfer, and then he became Scottie. So there may be another potential Scottie out there. We just don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, the weather didn't make it any better, right? I mean,
no.
What were they? What are we doing, guys? I mean, it was like ankle deep water in spots, right?
Yeah. I mean, they had to squeegee the fairways and greens during play just to be able to keep playing. And the biggest, you know, issue was for Sam Burns on 15. He hit a great drive, but because of the way the runoff was, the ball went all the way over to the first cut on the edge, and that's where water had been pooling. And so, you know, he's standing there in casual water, and the ball is in casual water, and he calls a rule official over and said, "I need a drop, casual water." And the rules official is like, "Well, it's not visible." That's the language, visible. So, no. And then, you know, Sam steps on it, shows the water. Sam swings the club, shows the water. But he's like, well, it's not visible. So we had another USGA official come over. Same argument. Guy says, nope, play it where it lies. You're not getting a drop. And so, you know, Sam, whether it was in his head or just the complete inability to control a ball that's coming out of a puddle of water, hit his ball hard left into the rough, which was wet because of the rain, couldn't get it out, and got a double bogey, and he was pretty much not a factor after 15. And I'm not saying he would have won. I mean, look, JJ throwing down a 1-under, the only golfer under par for the entire tournament, would have been tough to beat him even under the best circumstances. I mean, he birdied 4 out of the final 6 holes, guys. That's insane. 32. That's one of the lowest back 9 scores in U.S. Open in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, what's the reason for not, you know, stopping the round and playing today? I mean, I guess the ratings, but I mean
TV. I think they were
money and greed.
A lot of money involved. NBC wanted to finish it on Father's Day. They wanted the, you know, the whole Father's Day into the U.S. Open drama, and it's proven the ratings on Monday are abysmal, finishing up a major championship like that. So they were going to do everything they possibly could, and they did. And you could argue that the course was uncontrollable, unplayable, and they should have, you know, canceled the rest of that round and finished today. But they didn't, and we still had the amazing drama on 18, which we'll be talking about for a long time.
Well, I do want to say, so here's the rule, by the way. This is what Rule 16.1 says. It says it allows a player to take a free drop if they encounter, quote, abnormal course conditions, which are defined as animal holes, ground under repair, immovable obstructions, or temporary water.
Yeah.
So it's specifically in the rule.
Yeah.
He's not asking him to go outside of the plain language of the rule. I mean, if that's not temporary water, what is? Do you have to be submerged? Does the ball have to be submerged in water? You know, I mean, if so, say that. But the rule isn't written that way.
I don't understand the USGA ruling on that, and nobody has defended it. In fact, all the commentators I saw, as well as the pros, are like, you know, that was a bad ruling. So I'd be surprised to see that in the same situation, to see that the player would not get relief next time. Poor Sam.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I will say is there were two officials who both gave the same ruling on it. So imagine the controversy if one guy said, no, you don't get relief. The next guy comes up and says, oh, sure you do. And he goes on and wins the tournament. So we'd be having a different discussion. But boy, I don't know. It seems like the rule seems pretty clear. And it seems like he met the definition. So it is what it is, I guess, right?
It's just an interesting major champion with JJ. Now we've had Rory, Scotty, and JJ. So the Open is coming up next month at Royal Rush.
Mr. Everyman.
Should be fun. Can't wait. I love that golf course.
Hey, well, while I was watching a little bit of it, I was looking through my email and I got a little gift. Rooster, I got the preview of my new website.
All right. Nice. From Digital Law Marketing.
That's it.
All right.
Yep.
All right. Well, listen, friends, you work hard for your clients every day, and your marketing firm should work just as hard for you getting new clients. Digital Law Marketing does just that. They're excellent at what they do. They're doing Bison's firm's new website. We've had one with them for many years, and the results are fantastic. And the SMQB's Digital Law Marketing website is going to go live soon. So check them out at digitallawmarketing.com.
Yeah, I think I've been working with them for about 10 years now, and when I decided to update the site, there was no question I was going to stick with them. So highly recommend. All right. Since last we spoke, fellas, we have had some dumb people making some dumb trades.
Dumb year of dumb people making dumb trades.
Yeah. Where do we want to start? Let's, I guess, maybe start with the NBA trade. Rooster, you want to talk about that one?
Yeah. Something had to give with the Grizzlies. There was just no chemistry last year with them. They had some very talented young players on that team, and wound up firing their coach, who's brought them to the playoffs and et cetera. Anyway, they just traded Desmond Bane to the Magic for Kadarius Caldwell-Pope, Cole Anthony, and four unprotected first-round draft picks.
Jeez.
Now, Desmond Bane is a good young player, but I will bet that only the most diehard NBA fans know who he is. And if you compare that, of course, to what Pope was referring to earlier, the worst trade of the year, where the Mavs gave up
history,
Luka, and got nothing really in exchange.
One first round pick.
I just think that, the Magic gave up. I think this is a good trade for both teams, despite the imbalance in the picks that were given up. The Magic have a lot of picks. the Magic have used a lot of picks recently. They have a great young team, and they're looking at next year in the East with Jason Tatum being out for the year, the Knicks now in disarray because of this whole coaching fiasco. And it's, you know, whoever is left standing plus the Pacers. The Magic had to make a move. They did make a move. They got a great young player to go along with their great young players. I think that was a good move for the Magic. And, of course, the Grizzlies were just in huge trouble, and this is a great way to reboot for them. I think both teams did okay with this. The baseball trade, in my view, is a whole different story.
Well, don't we think that now the Memphis is in a rebuild mode?
Well, they're saying they're not getting rid of their two stars.
Well, Jaren Jackson's playing on a contract year next year, and he's cheap. He's like $24-25 million or something. He's gonna get paid.
Yep.
So, you know, do they potentially move him now to a contender and get more?
They say no. They say they're not.
I know.
And Ja, you know, they're not. They're also saying they're not going to move Ja.
I don't know if Ja's movable at this point.
Yeah, who wants him? Who wants him?
Does this show you just how unsure you can be of these draft picks? I mean, the fact that you take, like you said, a nice player, right, in Bane, like pretty good player, and you say, okay,
he's a top 40 player.
All right, fine, a top 40 player,
30 some odd teams,
is worth, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 picks plus two other guys. I mean, is that how little you think of the draft and your ability to actually get a player out of the draft at this point? Is that what a crapshoot the draft has become?
Not a great year, unless you're drafting in the top three. So that could play into it. But four is a lot. I don't care what kind of a year you have at the top of the draft. Four unprotected first-round picks, and they're not all in the same year either.
No,
that is
a lot.
All
the way out to 2030.
But you can package them too, you know, to get better deals. I mean, I agree with you, Rooster. I think Orlando is a team to watch big time. They needed – I mean, Bane is one of the best three-point shooters in the league. It's like 43% catch and release. Yeah. So I think that Orlando with Paolo and Bane and Suggs and those guys, they're going to be tough. And the East is very winnable. There's no team that really scares you in the East, even if the Pacers are playing well now.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I've been watching the Wizards acquire picks and young guys and getting rid of big, you know, expensive contracts and, you know, for about three decades now. So that hasn't gone so well. I don't know. I'm not sure how. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Maybe it's smart trade. Maybe it could work out for both teams. Doesn't make much sense to me. But man, I mean, just to pour a little more salt on the wound, Pope. Boy, that's gotta burn in Dallas. That has gotta really burn in Dallas.
Nico.
Oh boy.
Oh my.
All right. Let's go to the other big trade. And that's the Devers, Rafael Devers trade. This is such a hard one to make head. I mean, like, I don't know that people appreciate how good Devers is, right? I mean, this guy is probably a Hall of Famer at this point. His wins above replacement, he's probably going to end up 2, 2.5, 3 this year. I mean, so he's literally good for 3 wins above anybody else, you know, above the average player at his position. That's quite significant in baseball. That's not nothing. That's a big time wins above replacement for one season. And he's young. He's under contract. You know, the Sox, the Red Sox have, you know, after the Mookie Betts debacle, what are they doing to their fans?
Well, it was Mookie Betts, and then the next year they lost Xander Bogaerts.
Bogaerts, right?
Who walked on them? Fans were ready to revolt, and the Red Sox were like, "Well, we'll lock up Devers. He's a homegrown guy. We'll lock him up through a long-term contract, pay him a lot of money, and hopefully, you know, get the fans to calm down a little bit." Well, now he's gone. I think the fans are livid. And the other thing with Devers is he destroys the Yankees. He's a Yankee killer. It's best news for the Yankees to get him out of there. So I'd be pissed if I was a Red Sox fan. I know they got two good pitchers who there's a lot of upside with these guys and two other prospects, but you can't shit on the fans like that. I think they're gonna have some big blowback on this one.
They screwed this up from the minute they got Bregman. I mean, this was I don't know that you could see this coming. And somebody pointed out that just Joe Sheehan noted, you know, all the talk about Devers being bad in the clubhouse. Well, they were sweeping the Yankees with him in that clubhouse and getting back going to where they're kind of back relevant in the AL East. So he wasn't doing that much damage in the clubhouse, right?
He didn't do himself any favors, though, in spring training. I mean, the guy refused to take ground balls at third or first. He's supposed to be a third baseman. I mean, yeah. Who the hell does he think he is? He's not going to play the field, period?
Well, yeah, he didn't take him at first. Then he demanded a trade.
Yeah.
In preseason.
Yeah, I think he shares some of the blame for this. He's a prima donna.
Well, how does he help the Giants? I mean, the Giants are chasing the Dodgers.
Well, I mean, his the bat. Question is, the bat. I mean, the question is, will he play third base in San Francisco at all? I mean, he hasn't played it all season. Not exactly, you know, where you want to drop him in, but, you know, it's still relatively early in the season. You could get him some work in at third base and see how it changes the rest of that lineup. But, you know, I'm not quite willing to put all of the drama on Devers himself.
Not all of it, but he deserves some of the blame.
Yeah, he does. He does. He definitely gets some of the blame. But this is, I mean, this is about as stunning a baseball trade in June as we've had in a long, long time. And I just, you know, I don't, this is like a jaw on the ground sort of, wait, what? And I'm not sure that it's been appreciated as that. So we'll see. I mean, the Giants have got to be just over the moon. And you know who's running that team now? Buster. Posey. Yeah, Buster Posey. Yep. So anyway, all right. Anything else on that trade? Nothing. We are missing our IB SMQB, right? Milk's not here.
He's got Little League dad duties.
Yeah, but fortunately, we could talk a little bit about IB anyway, right?
We can. You know, talking about law firm marketing, the best marketing you can have is face-to-face networking with other lawyers from outside of your area, and that's what IB gives you, the opportunity to meet and learn with some of the best plaintiffs' lawyers in the country and indeed throughout Canada and Western Europe. Injuryboard.org. It is a great experience, a great educational program, great and fantastic networkings. Some of the better cases I get are from lawyers I've met through Injury Board.
We're all members, all loyal, dedicated members. So, all right, let's just touch on the playoffs that are still going on. Why don't we start with the NBA?
Well, tonight's game five.
Yeah, 2-2. Game five tonight at 8:30. And I guess the game is, where are we?
In OKC.
OKC tonight,
yeah,
right?
Best 2 out of 3 with 2 at home for OKC after they took game 4. I mean, the Pacers blew it. Pacers had game 4 and couldn't score. They got outscored like, I don't know, 10 to
OKC blew game 1, so they're even.
Agreed. But, I mean, Pacers could have gone up 3-1. And just same thing that they did to the Knicks. And so now I think that the general consensus is that they're in trouble, that Oklahoma City will win tonight. Whether the Pacers win game 6 is probably a big question mark. But you know, I think, of course, it takes so long. We'll probably not even have the series over by the time we do another pod. But I think this time next week, I think Oklahoma City is celebrating their first championship. It's SGA's time.
Rooster, who has more pressure on them tonight, the Pacers or the Thunder?
I don't know. The way things have been going, I don't think anything is predictable, and therefore I think the Thunder have more pressure because
100%.
You can't count the Pacers out ever, and the Thunder have blown some big leads in this series and blown an entire game in game one that they had in the bag. So they can't do that, and they cannot let that happen again. They have to play well at home and get up a game going back to Indiana. The other thing I think is kind of interesting is just like every championship series, there's always some unknown who steps up big, and this year it's Alex Caruso. The guy never scored 20 points in a game in the regular season, and he's done that twice so far in the finals, in addition to playing incredibly good defense. So it's been fun to watch him and SGA, especially in the last game. I do think they're the better team. I'm with Pope that they should win this, but, man, I just think the Pacers get underestimated by everybody who watches basketball. They are a really good team. They've beaten some really good teams. And any given night, they can beat the Thunder.
Well, let's put it this way. In beginning of the fourth quarter, if the lead is less than 25, Thunder are not going to be comfortable. It is hard to put the Pacers away. And I'm looking for a killer instinct from the Thunder tonight. I don't think it's going to be close.
Interesting. Well, I mean, the Pacers, you know, look, I don't think you get there and think you're playing with house money, right? Like these guys aren't thinking, well, we're just happy to be here at all. But I think they're going to play loose. I think they're playing loose. They've got the backstop of, you know, we got to win one on the road, right? We got to win one on the road and of course win one at home. But if they don't win tonight, they can shrug their shoulders and say, that's okay. We knew we had to win at home anyway, and we still have to win one on the road. For the Thunder, you lose tonight and you're going into Indianapolis. Woof, that's not where you want to be. So I think all the pressure's on the Thunder tonight.
Yep.
So it'd be interesting to see, do they translate that into the killer instinct, Pope, or do they play real tight? And it'll be a big surprise, but let's see. It should be fun. Predictions? Pope, you gave us yours. Rooster, what do you think happens tonight?
I think that the Thunder shake things up a little bit and play Hartenstein's a little bit more and win the game.
All right. Yeah, I'm going to go with that too. I like the Thunder. So, all right. And then we got to talk hockey. It's not over.
Isn't
look pretty over the
like
other night.
Feels like it's
over. It feels like it is. But again, we're going to Edmonton now, right? So, you know,
no.
You got a 3-2.
No, game six is in Florida.
Oh, you're right. Game six is in Florida. That's right. So they can close it out tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
That feels 3-2. Like they're going to.
Yeah. Well, that was a pretty dominant performance. And in fact, they had two dominant performances, except then they let Edmonton find a little wild magic, I guess, in game four.
Yeah, they've so, shrugged
the
that
third
off
overtime
fast,
game.
Though.
Yeah, right. So, you know, it's funny because it feels like the Panthers have been dominating, but you're right. We've had three overtime games. So I don't know. So game six is tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Are we gonna crown a Stanley Cup champion?
I'm afraid Canada is going to have to wait another year. Sorry, Moose Jaw.
Yeah, it's too bad. I was hoping the Oilers would win it, but I don't think they're going to. I think they lose in six.
Skating
right, well,
the cup
be the,
tomorrow night.
I'll be the contrarian. I'm going to say Edmonton pulls it out and we get a game seven.
I think the Oilers are suffering for their decision midway through this year not to upgrade their goalie position because they're getting killed.
Yeah, and they don't even know who to start now.
Right.
I don't
so both
they
of them are
decision.
Confidence are shaken since they're, you know.
Yeah. All right. Hey guys, who's got a punch?
It's this week's punchable face.
I've got several punches.
Oh.
My first punch is head of basketball operations for the Knicks, Leon Rose. They have a GM that I guess they just got a GM. They didn't have a GM when they fired Thibodeau. You don't go two games from being in the finals with a coach who brought you back to the playoffs in his very first year as your coach for the first time in 7 years and treat him like the shit they treated Thibodeau by just canning him almost minutes after the last loss to the Pacers. It was disrespectful. The rest of the coaches in the NBA have taken notice, and you notice there's no, people are not lining up to say, I'd love to coach the Knicks. It was a stupid move. It's just like GM 101. Have your next guy lined up before firing the last one. It's just dumb, and they're really paying a price for it. I just think he's ruined what was a really great Knicks upswing, and now I think we're going to be starting over again because of this. I have another punch, and it's this
young... Before that, do you have a prediction on who's going to be the coach?
Well, I hope it's Van Gundy. I think they need somebody like Van Gundy. Brown's been mediocre at lots of places. He's a great assistant coach. The guy who the Grizzlies fired, he was a pretty good coach. But do you fire Tom Thibodeau for your fifth choice, which is what this is now? Whoever it is at least the fifth choice. They've already been told by four teams, right, we don't have permission to talk to our guy. So now they're on their fifth choice, and, you know, you're going to get someone as good as Thibodeau at this point? I don't think so.
Unless you get
someone who hasn't been coaching for a while or who's in college.
Like Stephen A. Smith has denied permission for the Knicks to talk to him. I mean, the memes are awesome.
I think Jay Wright would have been good. He's not interested.
Nope.
I don't want to see Danny Hurley. I don't want to see somebody like that. I think Van Gundy would be a great pick.
The only thing you can hope for is, you know, if you think back to when the Heat brought on Eric Spoelstra, nobody really knew who he was. They thought he was kind of a lightweight who was just going to be Riley's, you know, errand boy.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, he's probably one of the best coaches in the NBA and goes, you know, underappreciated. So that's what you got to hope for, Roosters. You got to hope there's some guy out there who nobody really sees coming and is going to just, you know, blossom as a head coach. And there's
always
like that possibility.
Ime Udoka came from that. You know, no one saw him coming when he coached the Celtics. I was hoping that they would be able to get him free from Houston. But again, they should have at least had an inkling of whether that was doable before firing Tibbs. I like Ime. I thought he'd be a great choice, but he's not available. You got to kind of read the tea leaves. Who's available out there before you jump into the deep end?
Yep. All right. Next punch.
Shamir Stewart, the new defensive end drafted by the Cincinnati Bengals.
Mm.
All throughout the draft, all of the analysts were saying this guy's being drafted too high. He's too small, and you know you could just tell from his draft room appearance that he's kind of arrogant. He thinks the world of himself, but the analysts didn't quite match his view. And he's already trying to renegotiate his rookie contract before he's ever stepped foot on a practice field, and then just decided he was going to disappear from practice without giving any forwarding information. He just vanished. So good way to really screw up your career, pal. Who's going to want this guy next?
Wow.
I mean, what an idiot. What an absolute idiot.
All right, that is a mess. That's a good punch. I got a punch. It pains me to do it, but it has to be done. You know, when a manager brings you a World Series, they get a lot of leeway on things. But Davey Martinez has to get a punch this week. You know, I don't know. The Nats have a lot of young talent. I think the expectation, an optimistic expectation this year, was that they'd be 500. Most people still thought they're a year away. They've had a couple young guys up. They're bringing up their newest young star tonight, who will be probably making his first at bat before we finish recording here. But the Nats are on an 8-game losing streak. They were swept at home by the Marlins. And on Saturday during a presser, when asked about, I don't even think he was asked. There's just been a lot of heat on him about, you know, the coaches. At some point, when the team, you know, they went on an offensive spurt before they came home for this homestand. And, you know, like, I think I what I heard was, like, on June 1st, when the calendar month turned, they've scored, like, 31 runs in 17 games or something like that. It's just been nothing. So there's been a lot of pressure about the coaches, particularly the hitting coach. And Davey went on this big thing about it's never about the coaches. It's always about the players. Never about the coaches. And he even kind of doubled down the next day. Davey, man, you've been great. You've never put your foot in your mouth before. This was bad, though, man. It can be about the coaches. Davey, it pains me to do it, but fair is fair. You got to get a punch this week.
All right.
Pope, you got one?
I already punched the USGA. I'd be happy to punch him. If I could have the two USGA officials and just get one side punch right across and knock them both out.
All right. Fair enough. How about a lasso?
I've got a couple of NFL lassos. One is going to crack you guys up. But after these are both about resilience, I think. Daniel Jones has endured some of the shittiest coaching out there from Jason Garrett and Joe Judge, who were just so afraid of fumbles and this and that that they made the guy too conservative to be effective. He used to be a great rushing quarterback and make things happen, brought them to the playoffs, et cetera. And they just messed his head up. Well, it looks like he's about to be the starter for the Colts, and people are predicting he's going to have a great year. So I think that would be awesome to see after all that poor guy's endured. I never liked him. I was sorry when the Giants drafted him, but he stuck it out. I think he's gonna have a comeback year, and good on him.
This is me not holding my breath.
Yeah. The other one is a real nice one. Nick Chubb played 7 years for the Cleveland Browns and gave them his heart and soul and a couple of pieces of his knee. They're moving on from him. So he signed a one-year deal with the Texans this year. But you have to read the farewell letter that he penned to the Cleveland Browns fans. It's really something. It's just shows you the character of the man. He is a solid person, and my hat's off to Nick Chubb.
Man, if that guy hadn't gotten hurt, what kind of career would he have had?
Yep.
Buzzer beaters. Who's got one?
I've got a few.
All right, I got a couple too. So go ahead, Pope.
So tonight, Shohei Ohtani makes his first pitching debut. Sounds like I might have grabbed yours. Pitching debut against the Padres since his second Tommy John 21 months ago. Takes the mound for the first time. And, you know, we've debated at length on this pod about whether that's a good idea or not, or whether the Dodgers actually need him to be a good pitcher for them, you know, considering how stacked they are in their rotation. Either way, though, he is going to be out there. I'm sure he's going to be on a limited pitch count, but it'll be interesting to watch. Contrast that with today, the interpreter who allegedly stole $17 million from Shohei is going to federal prison for 57 months. Interesting, dichotomy there, considering the concern that Shohei may have had something actually to do with the bets and the cover-up. Maybe we'll never know, but interesting how it came out today.
By the way, here are the stats that Shohei is leading Major League Baseball in. Plate appearances, runs, home runs, slugging percentage, OPS, OPS plus, weighted on-base average, and then something I don't even know what that one is, RBAT plus, that's a new one, total bases, and intentional walks. Those are just the ones that he's leading Major League Baseball in.
And he'll be throwing, you know, close to 100 miles an hour tonight off the mound.
But by the way, they do need him. Their pitching is, while loaded, they're injured. They're decimated with injuries. Yeah. So they do need him right now. So, all right, what's your second one, Pope?
Second one is also baseball, but it's College Baseball World Series. Would be remiss if we didn't give you a quick update on that. A no-no today by Arkansas against the Cinderella Murray State Racers, who are out of the College World Series. Coastal Carolina is one game away from playing for the series next weekend. LSU and UCLA are playing. They're undefeated, and the winner of that will be one game away as well. So a lot of drama to come. To me, I think it looks like it's going to be a Coastal Carolina LSU matchup for the World Series next weekend. We could talk about that. And then finally, F1. What a great race yesterday in Montreal. Drama was really reserved for the 67th lap when McLaren's put their elbows out and Lando tried to squeeze by Oscar to get past him to get P4. And in doing so, wrecked his car out and did not finish. And it's going to cost him dearly in the points race. Now Oscar's got at least a one race lead pretty much ahead of Lando. But George Russell got his first win of the year. Kimi Antonelli got a P3. Mercedes showed some strength that we hadn't seen. Exciting. We're heading to Austria to the Red Bull Ring.
That's Kimi's first podium.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just turned 18.
Yeah,
18, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And Austria, the Red Bull Ring, will be interesting to see with Max how that all goes down in 2 weeks.
Lando, I think his chance of winning a world championship with McLaren is over. I think it's done. Piastri is living in his head, and he doesn't know how to handle it. I mean, that move, that was about as boneheaded a move, and he didn't need to do it.
No.
He was probably going to get past him at some point before the race ended, but I've been saying it for a couple weeks now. He is not mentally tough enough to deal with being the second driver on that team. And that is absolutely what he is right now. He is the second best driver on that team. And he's not going to be with McLaren any longer than he has to be.
Well, and I would have punched him, except he did actually step up and accept responsibility, which is, he had no choice. I mean, it was obvious. He tried to squeeze by an area where, you know, between him and the wall was going to win. But you're right. And, you know, McLaren has always said they have two number one drivers and they play them off each other. And, you know, this is the consequences of doing that. But Oscar is the alpha right now, and he's going to win the driver championship.
Yep. All right. I'm going to shout out the DC Defenders for winning the UFL championship. 5 touchdowns. I don't even know what's the United Football League. And they were led by a former NFL quarterback. I'm sure you guys are all familiar with the household name of Jordan Te'amu, who apparently played for the Washington football team at one point. He also spent 5 days with the Carolina Panthers. He was with the Texans, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Lions, and Minnesota at one point.
Bison's really stretching to hold on to that District of Champions moniker.
That's right, man. Mm-hmm. That's right. The Defenders are your world champions or whatever they're
called. Can't wait to see the swag you're wearing on that one.
Yeah, it's not been ordered yet, so we'll see.
Well, you know, Toby would have, if it's some Philly team would have won.
Oh, Toby probably would have footy pajamas. Right.
I mean, if Philly had a rollerball team and they won, can you imagine the swag he'd be wearing?
Yeah, for sure. Sheets, bed sheets. Okay. Anybody else have a buzzer beater?
I saw something. A quick one. You know, Travis Kelce had a rough year last year. Spent a lot of time jetting around the world with Bison's girlfriend, and. You know, put on a little weight, got a little slow. Everyone thought his career was on the back nine there. He showed up for camp 25 pounds lighter, looking like he might be pretty serious about having a good year this year. So keep that in mind when you're picking your fantasy teams.
Tay-Tay told him to get in shape or hit the highway.
Rooster, you're going to take him in the second round?
No. But, you know, he's been going really late in the mock drafts, so. You might see a little rise after the show.
The fantasy mock drafts have already begun.
They probably already shouldn't started. Have said.
Speaking of fantasy, I think we need a shout out to our own Bison. Tell us about it. What happened yesterday?
Oh yeah, came in fourth in the big
national pool
majors. Yeah, there was about 400 people in it or so. I'll take fourth. Happy to be in the money.
What did you pocket for that?
$250.
Nice. And the funny thing is, your listeners Bison and I were going toe to toe for most of the back nine. At one point, I was number one, and he was number, I don't know, eight or nine. And then Spawn heated up, and somebody had Spawn, and somebody didn't. And somebody is a lot, you know, feeling a lot better today than me.
Well, Pope, we didn't have the heart to tell you that when you were like tied for first, but you were behind on the tiebreaker.
I knew I was.
Right?
Oh, I was doing, I was running all the scenarios.
Yeah, well, we didn't have the heart to tell you that the guy in front of you had the same team as you did, so there was no way you were going to win. Yeah.
Okay. No, I actually almost had a spreadsheet. I was so into it on the back.
Oh, God. All right, guys, anything else?
No, look forward to seeing House. He'll be coming back for House Call soon.
Milk, we want to hear all the reports on the baseball tournament. 1 week of Little League Baseball in Knoxville. Who could ask for anything better than that?
I think they've already started 2-0. They're on their way. Go Palmacia.
Go watch Ohtani pitch tonight. See you guys. Have a good week.
See ya.
See you next week.